Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thinking about this situation with Governor Palin and her family now for about a week. It was a week ago tonight, and maybe you know about it, maybe you don't know about it, but there was a joke that I told, and I thought I was telling it about the older daughter being at Yankee Stadium. And it was kind of a coarse joke. There's no getting around it. But I never thought it was anybody other than the older daughter. And before the show, I checked to make sure, in fact, that she is of legal age, 18. Yeah, but the joke really, in and of itself,
still a rape joke, you swine ball.
Each time I see a little girl of 5 or 6 or 7, I can't resist a joyous urge to smile and say thank heaven for little girls.
Well, here's one tune that Letterman's not humming today.
Little girls get bigger every day.
Yep, old Davy boy. Time to go home and tinker with your vacuum cleaner. From a five-letter man to a zero-letter man in one vile slur. What do you mean you thought it was about the 18-year-old daughter, not the 14-year-old daughter? You still made a rape joke. You know, don't you understand how disconnected these liberals are from reality? You mean it would have been okay to make a joke about Palin's 18-year-old daughter being raped by a ball player in the stands, but it's not okay to make the same joke about the 14-year-old daughter? This guy is so disconnected from reality, which we all know, which is why they use the guys with ugly eyeglasses to write the jokes for them in the back room. I guess they don't even read them in advance anymore. Play Chevalier instead. What do I care? I'd rather hear talk about Iran and North Korea, where Obama's failing again. You talk about a five-letter man becoming a zero-letter man. Obama's got zero on every account. Every account, North Korea, zero. Iran, zero. Can you name one thing Obama's done so far that you'd give him a high grade for? What has he done? Forget it. I don't want to talk about Obama. He's a given. You know what I mean? God, what a double standard. What a double standard. You talk about freedom of speech. I know a little bit about it. I know a little bit about it. If a comedian or a talk show host says anything about a protected minority, all heck breaks loose. You make sexual jokes or some other malapropos statement, and bingo, the world falls down upon you, the sky falls. But when an old liberal white guy makes rape jokes about the young daughter of a conservative politician, suddenly they look the other way. Suddenly they look the other way. What, you're shocked by the hypocrisy? What I really wanted to talk about, you know, yesterday I talked about the world through a frying pan. Remember, it was a very popular day because people are fed up with politics. They know what they got. There's a lot of voter remorse in the land about the fraud Obama. By the way, did you see him speaking at the AMA? I watched the actual tape. The guy was sweating like in a steam bath because he's going to the doctors telling him he's going to put them out of business, basically turn them into stooges of the state, and he expects them to applaud him. So when he was on the Letterman show, I want to go back to something I really wanted to talk about, which is not my little brass shack in Keala Kakua. I wanted to talk about the sale begins when the customer says no. You know, I learned that when I was 18 years old. I was thinking of going into sales to make some money to work my way through college. And I went to some boiler room guys in a hotel in Manhattan. And they gave out a book on how to make a sale. I never became a salesman, but I learned that the sale begins when the customer says no. Actually, no, I learned it somewhere else. I remember now. I was young and didn't know anything about anything, and naturally I thought I knew everything. And I couldn't make a sale. So I went to the guy who owned the company. He said to me, kid, listen to me. What do you expect them to buy it because you're a nice, good-looking young guy? Why, what's wrong with you? He said, remember this, Michael. He said, the sale begins when the customer says no. You know that that's stayed with me for the rest of my life? In other words, we have a generation of kids out here today who don't know the first thing about rejection. They can't get married because they can't get serious with anybody, primarily because they're too thin-skinned. And if someone says one wrong word to them right away, they run away because they don't understand how to have a relationship. Recently, I tried to hire someone as an assistant. And when I met him, the person seemed rather enthusiastic. And then he called back once, several days later, 4 days later, still interested. And then I emailed back, but this guy had not followed up since. Now, this is in the worst economy since the Great Depression. And it indicated to me that this guy would be a lackadaisical employee. He is somebody I would have to run after and hold his hand, and I don't want to work with him. And that is because they've been raised in a society where everything is about the children. They feel that mommy and daddy will take care of them, that they can always move back in with their parents. Maybe it's from years of free everything. Maybe that's the problem. But as I said to you, in my day, I was taught that the sale begins when the customer says no. What does that mean? If someone says no to a member of today's children, they have to go through months of therapy. You say no to them, they wind up in therapy. And I think Obama is typical of this. Nobody has ever said no to him. He's gotten everything he's always wanted without having to struggle. But struggle is what forges a strong personality. It's what forges character. I told you yesterday that children who are not exposed to germs tend to be the ones that are the sickliest because their immune systems have not had a chance to build up a defense to it. And I say in the same way exposure to rejection builds up an immunity to it and allows people to be psychologically resilient. In other words, build up a little hide on your skin. But because liberalism has so carefully protected children from damage to their all-important self-esteem. Self-esteem. Now, I've always said, you can't have self-esteem if you have no self and if you've done nothing. But we have a whole generation of kids who have been raised to have self-esteem for doing nothing. Have you ever gone to a Little League field and you've seen the fathers? With the littlest kid, the kid swings and misses five times in a row in the father. Good job! Whatever the kid does, good job! This over emphasis on positive reinforcement. Good job! The kid takes a dump in his pants. Good job! I mean, come on! That's not child rearing. That's really not child rearing at all. It's liberalism. And it's not good for the child. The child must learn to really do something before you say good job. But because the neo-Marxists of today have tried to hand everything to kids on a silver platter, the children have no motivation to achieve anything in their lives. In my time, if you wanted a good job, any kind of job or anything, you had to fight for it. If someone said, I won't hire you, you sat on their doorstep and showed them that you weren't about to give up so easily. You said, look, think about it again. Over and over again, you sat there. You didn't take no for an answer. You called them again and again until you got through to them. Then you begged them to see you, saying, I know that you've turned me down. I respect that, but I must tell you something you don't know about me. Usually, the boss of a company would have you come in saying, this person is very persistent. Maybe I should see them again. You refused to accept rejection in my day because accepting it made you a reject. You hear this? If you accepted rejection, you became a reject. But call anyone a reject today, and suddenly they go into therapy, and they might even sue you for hate talk. Now, is this the reason why politicians claim that illegal aliens aren't doing the jobs that Americans won't do? In my day, there weren't jobs that Americans wouldn't do. They were thankful if they got a job as a janitor, and they took pride in their work. Today, they expect to be president of the company within a month of arriving. And I'm going to ask you, what did you have to do to get where you are today? Maybe some young person will be saved by your story. What struggles did you have to go through to achieve a position in life that you have today, and how long did it take? I want to remind you of something else. When I was very young and just came out of college, I was a welfare worker, meaning in the New York Department of Welfare. I don't know what they call it today, something else. Then it was called the Welfare Department. Today it's called something else. Then I worked as a teacher. Then I worked as an editor in a book company. I didn't last very long because I wasn't a good editor. And the editor-in-chief called me and he said, Michael, I've got bad news for you. You're a nice person, but you're not an editor. You can't. We're going to fire you, but I'm going to give you a choice. And this is a true story. I never remember telling this one. He said, we're not going to fire you if you'll take a job starting on the very bottom. I'm going to give you a broom every day, and you have to start every day by sweeping up in editors' rooms. You know what I said to him? I'll take it. And do you know that I took that broom and I diligently swept the floors in that editor's office and in the assistant editor's office and the associate editor's office? I don't know how many months I did it, but eventually I became a junior editor in a very, very small, obscure publication. So you see, rejection is part of growth. Unfortunately, in America today, rejection is verboten. And look at the results we have. And so remember the purpose of this story. It's a positive purpose. The purpose of the story is to tell the young people listening to this show that the sale begins when the customer says no. I'll be right back. Savage. We're talking about everything. Iran, Obama's failing on every turn. Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England, which you didn't read because you don't want to see the truth. No, God sees the truth but waits. Don't worry about it. You'll get punished one day. what did I want to talk about? There's a lot of stuff, whatever. Letterman, from a five-letter man to a zero-letter man in one bad joke. And the Iran thing is very bad. Very bad what's going on over there. It shows you Obama stabbed them in the back. Do you hear the statement Obama gave? You got people being shot to death in the streets of Iran because they know the election was fixed, right? Obama comes up with a statement, I don't want to meddle. You hear this? What leadership? A towering giant. Obama says it's not productive to be seen meddling. But he's the leader of the free world. That wouldn't be meddling to say that the election was a fraud. And that we want a recount. But then if he said that, it would open up the whole fraudulent election of Obama. You know, the people in Iran are actually freer than we are here. I've been thinking about this. Many of us understand in our guts that Obama was elected because of two things. One, a compliant media. Two, millions of illegal aliens voting for him who had no right to vote. And three, maybe millions of people who were not even alive were voting many times through Acorn's pressures. There should have been protests in America. There should have been millions of people in the streets demanding a recount, demanding that Acorn be investigated. But do you know that in Iran they have an opposition party, the Democracy Movement? We don't even have an opposition party in this country called the Republicans anymore. Why? How many years have I told you it's a one-party system? You have lost this democracy. You had lost it long before I began a radio. It's long been a one-party system. Democrats, Republicans. 8 years, the Republicans raped the Treasury. They didn't want it anymore. So they ran the doofus McCain. Every time he surged in the polls, he said, oh, don't vote for me, basically. Don't vote for me. Vote for Obama, basically. He had every opportunity to win, but the Republicans had gotten through raping the Treasury. And the way the game works is Team B then gets to rape the Treasury for 8 more years. So they didn't want to win. There should have been massive protests. Acorn, illegal alien votes. So as I say, it seems to me there's more freedom in Iran right now. New York City, WOR, Andrew. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. Andrew, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. All right, dead in the water, gone with the wind. He's calling the next radio show. Los Angeles, KGIL, Mark, you're up. Savage Nation, go ahead.
Your comments about rejection reminded me of the day I became a stockbroker. I didn't have a job. They had 1,500 applicants. I walked into the manager's office with a suit, told him I wanted to be a stockbroker, and he sat me down and he said to me, you must love rejection. I said, What are you talking about? He said, In this business, in your first year, 98% of the people you talk to are going to say no to you. But right. Those 2% that say yes are going to make your career. So you better
love... But Mark, you're from a different time. Like I said, I learned the sale begins when the customer says no. You learned from your boss that you have to accept 98% rejection. You're only focused on 2% acceptance. Today the kids are told, oh, you should have full self-esteem even if you fail.
That's absolutely right.
That's all. All right, there's nothing new in that. I'm just saying, I don't know how these kids can expect to have a job. You say one word to them, right away, go home to mommy and call a lawyer. It's amazing the country I'm living in. You know, I'm very observant. I'm bicycling today down to the mall. I see a lot of things wherever I go. Like, for example, I bought a taco for, I don't know what's it called, in Baja Fresh. I gave up. I didn't even want to think about what I wanted today. So two tacos, fish tacos, $8, $6.99, a soda. The bill was like $8. So I give the kid 20, and I look at it, the tax is like 80 cents in California. So I threw him a buck. He was very happy because who gives a dollar in a fast food place? And he's very nice and getting a little Spanish, this and that. Figured why not encourage the kid, you know. So I thought about it. I said, I gave them a dollar tip in a takeout joint, but 80 cents went to the wonderful state of California who taxes me 10% a year on my income tax, and everything I buy, 9%. Where does the money go? The roads are broken. The bums are littering the streets. The politicians are robbing the treasury. Where are the services in this state? Now, that 80 cents I paid the state, I would rather have given another half a buck to the kid behind the counter, but it went to the state. Where does it go, though, you know? Now, then I bicycle back up before getting in the car and driving over the bridge, and I see a little house being finished that they were building. I like to watch the houses go up. They're still building a little here and there, overpriced like crazy. They're never going to sell it. I noticed that there were two white boys with picks digging in the ground. They were doing cleanup work after the house was almost finished. They were digging a trench or shoveling. I don't know what they were doing. They were ditch diggers, in other words. And I noticed that the illegal aliens actually built the house. There was a white guy who was the contractor. All the artisans were from Mexico or Central America. They were the artisans. And the white boys were digging ditches. And I said to myself, there's a story here, too. What's the story? The Mexicans and Central Americans are hard workers, and they learned a trade. They learned how to be a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician. And the white boys learned nothing in school except how to put a condom on a cucumber and what racism and homophobia is and that America's no good. And they wind up with a fork, with a pitchfork in their hand, digging a ditch because they were not fit for anything else. That's the product of liberal education.
Savage.
We are talking about rejection on the Savage Nation as building character. That's how they used to train men in the army. That's how you were trained in anything in the world till this liberal education started in and everything self-esteem. Good job. Good job. The kid swings and misses, falls on himself. Good job, Bobby. I mean, I believe in positive reinforcement up to a point, but not to the point of absurdity. You go to a playground, you see parents, everything is good job. The kid falls, good job. Kid rips his foot open, good job. It's unbelievable to me. Idiots, a generation of idiots. How can they accomplish anything if everything's a good job? How about when they do a bad job? I didn't say get angry at them, but stop with the good job every 2 minutes. See, it's the Spock thing of positive reinforcement. I remember in the 60s, positive reinforcement, raise your children with it. Now, what do you wind up with? A kid who doesn't even understand when he does anything wrong. So that's why I asked you, how did you get where you are today? Whatever you're doing, you had a struggle for it. The government didn't give it to you. The sale begins and the customer says, no, I learned that when I was young. Now, I'm not going to go on and on about this all day. We could talk about, you know, Iran, it's a big story where Obama says, people being shot in the streets, Obama says it's not productive to be seen meddling. See, leadership means meddling. Leadership requires thought. Leadership requires a speech that encourages the opposition while not provoking a militant reaction that's even worse. That's leadership. That's skill. Obama doesn't have the skill to inject himself into the Iran situation. What do you mean not productive to seen meddling, to be seen meddling? I never heard of anything like this. We've gone from the light of the world into something else, the whoopee cushion of the world. That's all. We've gone from being seen as the light unto the world, democracy, to the whoopee cushion of the world with this guy in the White House. Ed, Fort Lauderdale, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. You know, when I first graduated high school, I didn't go to college, and I told my father he owned a small construction company, and he was making pretty good money. I told him I wanted to do what he did. I wanted to be the boss. He told me, no, you have to come out and work as a laborer. So I told him, no, you know, I want to do, you know, I want to get a fancy truck and ride around like you and be the boss. He started laughing at me, and he told me, get out of here. And I actually went to work for one of his friends on a crew that put in sidewalks every day. And I was one of those guys that I dug ditches, I laid pipes, and when I actually got good enough and knew what I was doing, then I went to work for my father when I actually became part of the competition. And now
I'm curious, how many years did you work for the competition?
About 5 or 6 years.
That's very interesting because I read a story about 10 years ago that family businesses should not take their children into the business until they have worked for a competitor for 3 to 5 years.
When I started, I was a laborer. We put in sewer pipes and water pipes, you know, in big ditches. And when I started, I was the dummy who used to go and get all the pipes and bring them to the skilled people that knew how to install the pipes. After my first year and a half there, I just caught right on to this kind of stuff. I was mechanically inclined. That's something they used to say. They don't say that anymore. I was mechanically inclined. So, I went from being the dummy on the top of the ditch to running a crew with my own little crew within 2 years, and then I went out and I started actually competing with my father's company. We actually started taking jobs away from him, and his friends would call up and say, hey, I got your son on my job. He's doing a great job. And actually, I didn't go to work for him right away. I joined the Army after that, after about 5 years, because I figured it was something I needed to do. For my life experience, it was always something I wanted to do. And when I came out, my father said, are you going to come work for me now? And I said, yeah, okay, sure. And we've been working together ever since.
And what, today, Ed, you're running the company?
Yeah. And I think back, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about when I told my dad. He was so right. It's not even funny. I've heard you tell stories about those old Italian guys with the thick necks and the hair on the back of their hands. You describe my family. They're from Queens. They're from Brooklyn. They're from all over New York. You know, they tell you nice things, but in a very rough way. They're always looking out for you. That's love in my family.
That's right. You know what? Well, let me ask you something. When you did something wrong, did they say good job?
No,
I have a friend who's a wealthy guy and a very big benefit, a conservative and a philanthropist. He said he'd come home from school with a 98 on his report card. His father would say to him, why didn't you get 100? What happened to the other 2 points?
That's exactly right. I would come home all happy. I got B's or I got a C. And my father would say, why are your grades so low? How come you didn't get A's? What's wrong with you?
And today, the kid would call up the Child and Family Services so that they could take the kid away for abuse.
Once, my younger brother once told my father threatened to slap him, and my brother said, if you do, I'm calling HRS. And my father said, well, in the time it takes them to get to this house, I'm going to kill you. I brought you in.
Is your father still around?
Yes, he is. God bless him. Yes, he is.
How old is he?
He's about 65, 66 years old.
Oh, he's a young guy. But is he retired?
He still works because, you know, he doesn't he doesn't really have hobbies. I mean, he works. He likes to go out. He meets with the.
It's interesting. You know, that's very interesting. I have no hobbies either, really, other than the boating or whatever. The reason I have no hobbies is I couldn't have time to develop them.
Yeah, I mean, my father says, you know, hobbies, that's for rich people. He says, you know, I was always busy working, trying to make money. And, you know, now we're doing okay and everything's all right. But, Dr. Savage, could I just like to say something about President Obama saying not to meddle? Remember when John F. Kennedy told people we'll go anywhere, do anything to support freedom and democracy, and Ronald Reagan told the people of Poland, stand up and you'll have a friend in America? That's leadership. You know, tear down this wall, that's leadership. Not telling people we're not going to meddle.
No, this guy is a pacifist socialist of the classic variety. He's following in the footsteps of Neville Chamberlain, who acquiesced to Hitler's aggression. And we know what followed as a result of acquiescing to the dictator called Hitler. I am terrified every day I wake up. I'm afraid to turn the computer on to see what these monsters are going to do next. They know that they're no longer having to worry about the United States of America. And I'm afraid that they're going to take a shot at us very soon.
Well, weakness breeds contempt in this world with all of these thugs and these dictators. Just today, I mean, it was amazing. I was actually eating lunch with my father in a restaurant. They had the news on, and I saw that our president met with the leader of South Korea and reaffirmed that we're actually still their allies. That's amazing. Meanwhile, he wants to meet with Hugo Chavez. He wants.
What does he mean by that? He's still our ally. But what does that mean? He's still our ally. What did he say to him? I saw the speech. He's still our ally, but what is he doing about North Korea threatening to nuke them? Nothing. Wait, play clip 11. Hey, Ed, hold on. That's a great call. Play clip 11. I know what he's talking about.
The Republic of Korea is one of America's closest allies. Our friendship has been forged through a history of shared sacrifice, and it is anchored in our shared democratic values.
All right, fine. Oh, yeah. We understand all the highfalutin college talk, but you're no longer a professor, Mr. Obama. So let's see when it gets tough now. Let's hear clip 14.
There is another path available to North Korea.
See?
A path that leads to
peace.
Hold
it. Stop right here. See the positive reinforcement? These people are trying to use Dr. Spock's methodology with North Korea, with Iran, with China, and with Russia. Give them the positive, and they'll follow you. No, my friends. These are not children in a little red schoolyard house. These are dictators who are laughing at you. Play clip 14. Listen to this.
There is another path available to North Korea, a path that leads to peace and economic opportunity for the people of North Korea, including full integration into the community of nations.
Oh, please.
That destination can only be reached through peaceful negotiations that achieve.
Okay, fine. That's all well and good. But what do you think the dictator of North Korea thinks when he hears this kind of college talk? He spits at it, and he'll go ahead and do what he wants, just like Ahmadinejad has been doing. Just as any dictator does. They do it because they can do it, and they do it because they can get away with it. Yeah, I believe in the carrot, but where's the stick? The stick should have been, all right, here's the positive. The negative is, unless you do it by Friday at 5 o'clock, we're going to blow up your launch pads, Johnson. I'll be right back. Stations reject me when I wanted to start in talk radio. 300, more than 300, either didn't answer or said no. And four said yes. And here I am 15 years later. So you got to expect rejection. And though I remember, never forget when I was a young man, before I was married, any guy who wants to meet a woman and whatever has to work at it. No one throws themselves at you. And you start to think, oh, if you're an athlete, they throw themselves at you. I'll never forget, as long as I live, that a famous athlete said that he had to work for every relationship he ever had, even the casual one-nighter. No one ever came up to him in a bar like they tell you in the movies. They make believe that that's a common occurrence. You're the only one on earth that the women aren't throwing themselves at. And if only you buy this or you do that or you subscribe to this or that, suddenly you're going to have a perennial, you know, love and whatever. It's all rubbish created by Moloch. Moloch creates all of this for you in order to make you buy things. If I want my dog to do certain things, I certainly know what a Pavlovian response is. I will wager a bet that children today have not been taught what a Pavlovian response is, and I mean college children. And the reason that the social engineers have not taught children in college what a Pavlovian response is because they have been Pavlovian responsing them from the day they walked into college, making them jump through the hoops of a liberalism, communism, socialism, and political correctness, however you want to phrase it. It is all Pavlovian response. You say A, they jump through the hoop. You say C, they jump that way. They say jump, they crawl. It's all Pavlovian response. If I want my dog to do something, I can make him do it without threatening him, without doing anything. All I got to do is say, Teddy, the break is over. I got to go back into the studio. I'm going to close the door. I move the door shut. He comes running to the studio because he doesn't want to be locked out of the studio. Pavlovian response. Our society wants your children to conform to certain thoughts. They have trained them for 20 straight years with Pavlovian responses about what is politically appropriate for them to do. That is why we have Obama, who is an absolutely inexperienced man, as the president of the greatest nation in the history of the world, and he is dismantling this country on a daily basis. He is dismantling the fundamental structure of this nation on a daily basis, taking it apart as though it's his erector set, and he's unscrewing it and putting it back the way he wants. I don't think you understand this. I don't think you understand the danger you are in. Believe me, it's unbelievable to see in only a few months, 4 months, the man is taking down the entire edifice of this nation, taking it apart. Now, I understand that anyone who criticizes Obama is called a fascist and a racist and a thisist and a thatist. They want zero opposition. They want less opposition than they have in Iran. The left has worked so hard to put this fraud into the office that if anyone says one word, they say you're an enemy of the state. I saw it over the weekend. There's a left-wing fanatic in the New York Times named Frank Rich. Predictable columns, boring. He's the Barney Frank of the New York Times. So who does he salute? He salutes Shepard Smith of the Fox News Network because Shep Smith is saying he's getting a lot of hate mail now for being so middle of the road. And he holds up Shepard Smith as the kind of conservative that he respects that he could do business with. So in other words, anyone who's a real conservative is a fascist. Anyone who's a fraud like Shep Smith is suddenly a respectable man to the Bonnie Franks of the world. You get how this works? Well, let me tell you something. I'm not going to suddenly change my tune because they want me to. I see what's going on here. Obama, in a few months, has almost dismantled the entire edifice called America. I don't even know if the military can function anymore. We have a situation in North Korea that required military response, a military response months ago. It should have happened under Bush. But Bush was no different. He had already deballed the military. What do I mean by a military response? Let's get very clear here. Let me get down to brass tacks. I'm not saying nuclear war. We have Aegis missile cruisers off the coast of North Korea. When Kim Jong-il started toying around with his rockets, we had an opportunity to launch, with a few computer keys, a number of missiles and blow up the launch pads. That could have been done. That would have stopped all of this. But now we are at a stage where now North Korea is threatening nuclear war. And what's Obama doing? Nothing but giving speeches as though he's still in a college somewhere in Chicago. Comes to Iran, the people are being shot in the streets. The Hitler of Iran wins a fraudulent election. Why do I say fraudulent? Because nobody could have concluded that he had, that anyone had won, or what the results were, because there were 40 million handwritten ballots in Iran. Do you know that? 40 million ballots that had not been counted already. He was the winner. Sounds very much like the Democrat Party declared Obama the winner before Acorn even went out in the street with truncheons. He was already the winner. And so as I say to you, where has Obama shown any leadership? I certainly don't know it. I haven't any idea where he's showing any leadership. So it's very dangerous. Now, why am I tying in rejection and showing the people who are listening to the show that most of the people who are older, let's say over 40, listening to this show, grew up with a great deal of rejection, grew up understanding that struggle was the core of existence and the core of building a character, and now we have a whole generation that does not want to subject themselves to rejection, and does not want to do the hard work necessary to save America from this neo-Marxist juggernaut that is aimed at our jugular vein. And that's why I'm doing it. I'm telling you we're in grave danger here. While Obama is a wimp when it comes to real dictators, I think he's anything but a wimp when it comes to the internal opposition called the true conservatives. And that's a very important concept for you to grasp. Oh, he's no wimp when it comes to you and I. They're using all the power of this government, including the propaganda arms called ABC, CBS, NBC, etc., which now are part and parcel of the propaganda machine called the government media complex. They're using all of it to sway your mind and to control you. But when it comes to Iran, when it comes to North Korea, suddenly he wimps out. You understand what I'm saying to you? So that's what I'm asking you today. What did you have to do to get where you are today? Because I learned that the sale begins when the customer says no. I forget exactly in which particular job I was in when I learned that very young, but I did. What does that actually mean? It means that when you go out to sell something, expect the person you're selling it to say, no, go away, don't bother me. Well, what does that mean? Well, you want to run away and go have a drink because you feel bad? No, you got to go stay there, be persistent. You got to be very persistent. Persistence pays off, whether it's in a love affair or in business. Nobody throws themselves at you in this world. Go back to the biology. Even you want to talk boys and girls, you know, in a very nice family way. Study biology. I remember when I was when I first studied fertilization of an egg. You look at the millions of sperm that travel to reach that one ovum that is going to be the recipient of only one spermatozoan. You think about it. See, it's incredible. And you start to think about yourself. You say, well, what if another sperm had reached the egg? Would I be here? I don't know. I can't answer the question, but the answer is no. So it's a miracle that you're even here, that you as you, your DNA, for example, is a result of that particular aggressive sperm, you want to call it that, that found the one soft spot, so to speak, in the ovum and penetrated it to fertilize that egg. It's a miracle. The whole thing's a miracle from beginning to end. But there's a bigger story here. The biggest story is millions and millions and millions try to get into that area, they try to reach there. Many millions die on the way. And then only one sperm gets to penetrate that entire gigantic ovule. You say, well, what does that tell you about life? It tells you everything about life. A, that women rule. B, that you must learn to say to your wife, yes, dear, no matter what she says. C, not to get too philosophical here, but everyone understands that women control everything. That's what you got to understand that. And a lot of male violence comes from the fact that they won't accept the fact that they're subservient to the females. They outlive you. They inherit all the money, et cetera. So you better be smart about it. Doesn't mean after you humiliate yourself. But the fact is, you learn that very young. But you also learn that everything is about competition. Everything is about competition. And that you yourself are just one mote in the mire, so to speak. And that's the lesson here, which is that you got to struggle to achieve anything. And I don't believe that this country can remain great without struggling against oppressive regimes such as North Korea, for example, in this case, and Iran. The day we cease struggling against them is the day we will become just like them.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Out to school, the teacher is teaching the golden rule, American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass, working your fingers right down to the bone, and the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell.
The world's a mess. A mess. When you get weakness, you have aggression. That's what we have right now. Ex-U.S. President Carter escapes assassination by Al-Qaeda-linked Palestinians. His good friends over there try to kill him. Army of Islam, the Palestinian Al-Qaeda cell in Gaza, tried to assassinate former U.S. President Jimmy Carter by planting a 200-kilo bomb in the path of his exit through the Erez crossing after he held sympathetic talks with its Hamas rulers. You hear this? Terrible, terrible story. Iran State TV, supported by San Francisco Chronicle, publishing articles glorifying the Iranian regime. I cannot believe what I'm looking at going on in this country, that the far left is actually taking the side of the Iranian dictatorship. It's amazing to me. I mean, it's becoming crazier by the day. Yesterday I talked about here on the Savage Nation, the world through a frying pan. Today I was talking about the sale begins when the customer says no. Now we could go to anything you'd like to talk about. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. My website is michaelsavage.com, as usual, open for business. I'd like to talk about now the protests in Iran and where are the protests in the United States. Across Iran, people are rising up in protest against Ahmadinejad. The election was stolen by the Hitler of Iran, and people are now putting their lives in a line to demand justice. What happened? The internet and cell phone service in Iran shut down by the government. Demonstrators being shot and killed in the streets, but still, they go out and they protest. But here in the United States, there is nothing but silence. What do I mean? Last year, there was an election in which there were serious questions about fraudulent ballots from Acorn, voting by illegal aliens, and the very birth certificate issue of the candidate who won. We supposedly elected a president who was a previously unknown senator. He had no serious background or experience to be president. But after it, despite all of the questions about illegal aliens and fraudulent ballots and Acorn, no protests, no riots, no demands for an investigation into vote fraud, nothing but acquiescence here in America. Why? Americans have a mindset of conformity. They have bellies stuffed with junk food and minds stuffed with Moloch's media madness. Americans of today are taught from childhood not to say anything hurtful, not to say anything offensive, not to look racist, and certainly never to hit back. The few that have not been completely brainwashed look to the leadership of the Republicans, but the Republicans didn't want protests either. They didn't want to win. They had just had 8 years to empty the U.S. Treasury and knew it was the Democrats' turn to empty the Treasury. In Iran, there may be religious oppression, sure. But in the United States, the pervasive oppression of thought by the media, the diversion of energy and attention into psychological and political pornography, and a constant stream of doublethink prevent any effective protest by the population. Iranians are actually blessed by the absence of Western media. Even under the oppression of the mullahs, they can still think freely, if not always act freely. Iran may have jackbooted soldiers shooting protesters in the streets, but in the United States, they're not even needed. The government media complex is not worried that you will ever get up off your couch, march into the streets, and defy them. In Iran, even the Republican Guard seems to be turning against Ahmadinejad. Several of them were arrested today. In the United States, the only thing that needs to be arrested is your thought process. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of my monologue. That's all. Now, what would you like to talk about? It's pretty good, not bad. Admittedly, not simple to digest. Not as simple as the world through a frying pan, nor as simple as the sale begins when the customer says no, but very important for you to hear that your great nation called America is being dismantled on a daily basis by the neo-Marxists in the White House. Sacramento George, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Dr. Savage.
Hello.
Hello from an immigrant, a legal immigrant who came to this country 49 years ago.
Right.
I'm happy to come here, and I came here to live in and choose where I want to live, to choose where I want to work. I came here to have the freedom of speech and expression, that I would not have to fear anybody behind my back listening to what I say, so that I would be punished. And after 49 years, I have served honorably in the American Army. I'm a veteran, ex-paratrooper, and the country that I came into is no longer the country I came to. I feel like I need to go back where I came from. It's going.
Well, let me ask you. Hold on now, George. What country do you mind telling us?
Former Balkans, Yugoslavia.
It seems to me there's more freedom there than there is here.
Well, when I came here in 1960, sir, I don't know about the freedom. You couldn't even say one. You could not say that your president was an idiot or that you didn't agree with him. You would serve jail.
Wait, hold it. We don't serve jail for saying Obama is this or that. But we are all roundly criticized and called racist if we say one word about his neo-Marxist policies. How much further is it going to take, do you think, for them to start demanding jail sentences for anybody who speaks out against Chairman Obama?
Well, this is what I'm trying to say.
I'm telling you, step by step, they're taking away the nation.
Yeah, they are taking away the nation. And I saw through this man's rhetoric at the very beginning at the opera show, you know, when he was on it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. It scared the hell out of me because he's every day talking about things. He's every day in the news. He's pumping people up. And there are people out there who are really being pumped up. They're pro-Obama. They think he's some kind of a savior. He's going to give everybody a free check. You won't have to work anymore.
Yes.
And this is kind of upsetting me because I've retired. And I'm living happily ever after still because I provided for myself. I never had a handout. never collected welfare, and never even expected to. But unfortunately, the country has started falling long time ago to liberal-minded media and people. We got welfare systems.
So you think that what we're all seeing, it's not even thinking, we are moving into a socialist state of the type you left behind without the state-approved violence, yet.
Yeah. We are doing.
So how much longer is it going to be until the state starts enforcing its views upon people through violence and force is what you're worried about?
Yes, I am worried about. This is what some people say. We are forsaking our liberties for safety, our freedom for safety. I don't want that.
George, to me there is a sign that if Obama does a certain thing, I'm leaving the country, and I'll tell you what it is. I'm laying it on the line. God forbid he ever follows through with his statement that he wants a private civilian military force. Do you remember that speech during the campaign that was brushed aside by ABC, CBS, and NBC about a private civilian security force as size of the military equally supported that reports only to him? Do you remember that?
To tell you the truth.
Hold on a minute. Guys, I want you to dig that up in Obama's own voice for all of the Bonnie Franks of the world. I want you to – you guys have it yet? Because the people, you have to hear this to believe.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Now, did you hear that one? A civilian national security force? That's the SA. That is the equivalent of Hitler's private elite bodyguard. Do you hear this, George?
Yes.
I didn't make this up. This is not Photoshopped. This was Obama during the campaign signaling what he will do when he gets the power to do it.
But you know what he could do? Actually, France has a foreign legion. Over here, we can have an illegal legion. We can have all the people that want to...
If he takes the thugs from ACORN and the thugs from other groups and militarizes them or grants them police powers and arms them, you will know that the country is over. And I will leave this country at that point. I certainly won't be going to England, though, George.
We shall be censored.
We'll talk about it. George, thanks for the call. I got to move on. By the way, I thought about this. As you know, Michael Savage is banned in the United Kingdom. That you know. And we're fighting it every day. I don't know if you know that, but my lawyers are struggling every day against the government, who has not yielded yet. I will update you as things occur. It looks like Monday is going to be the day the lawsuit's filed. I'm not certain yet. But I thought about it. I'm actually prohibited from traveling to several other countries as well, and they now shall go in the same list as the United Kingdom, and they include Syria. I cannot travel to Syria. I cannot travel to Cuba. I cannot travel to North Korea. I cannot travel to Iran. So now the United Kingdom is on the same list as Cuba, North Korea, Iran, and Syria. Isn't that wonderful? They're now in that distinguished list. They think they put me in an undesirable list. Well, guess what? By doing so, they put themselves on a list of undesirable nations. Think about it. I'll get back to you.
Savage.
I'm a walking in the rain. Tears are falling and I feel a pain. I wish you were here by me to end this misery.
Many of you are anxious right now listening to the news, never mind just on this show, The Savage Nation. But even if you just casually glance at headlines, you don't understand the world is in turmoil. And you are perplexed because you don't understand what happened to your nation. You have a man who comes across as some kind of messiah, and yet he says nothing to dictatorships, travels the world apologizing for the greatest nation on earth, making us into a bad nation when we're a good nation. And now when he has real dictatorships threatening us and threatening others, he says nothing other than we shall not meddle. Where's the U.S. military in all of this? What has the U.S. military been ordered to do recently that gives you any sense of confidence? I can't answer that. So I went to a book called The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Many of you know the book. Many men listening to the show have heard about it. And there are some general principles. And one of them is this. Subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. Let me read that again in case you didn't get that in college. Subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. Now let's apply it to the United States of America. You've got North Korea, basically a non-threat as near as 6 months ago, that launched rockets that fell into the sea. We had a chance at that time under George Bush to launch missiles against the launching pads and stop this. But instead, Bush acquiesced to North Korea, primarily because China threatened the United States of America with the great amount of bonds that they hold, the T-bills, rather. And, of course, the president acquiesced, so the military became subjugated without firing a shot. So China subjugated their enemy's army without firing as the true pinnacle of excellence, because their generals and their politicians certainly have studied Sun Tzu. I certainly don't think many of our leaders understand what I'm talking about. But remember that Sun Tzu also wrote that whenever possible, victory should be achieved through diplomatic coercion, thwarting the enemy's plans and alliances and frustrating his strategy. So that's been done to us, not by us. And then it says, only if an enemy threatens the state with military action or refuses to acquiesce without being brutally forced into submission should the government resort to armed combat. So we may have the most powerful weaponry on earth, but we have no leadership. And so therefore, even North Korea no longer fears us. They understand that we're afraid to use even our Aegis-class missile cruisers to take down his launch pad. So he says, You go near me, and we'll have nuclear war. You have Iran, fraudulent election, 40 million handwritten votes, uncounted, that a victory is declared by the Hitler of Iran. And the Obama comes out and says it would be counterproductive to say anything right now. That's not leadership. It's not leadership at all. Now we read there's a new Obama plan, that he wants to set up a new agency to supervise all global financial firms. So we have a United States president that is setting up a new division of his government to supervise not Wall Street, but all global financial firms. Now, you have to ask yourself, who will do that for him? There's only one man that comes to mind. It's the man who almost broke the Bank of England and the man who put Obama in office. I'll let you figure out how you spell his name. Phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Fort Lauderdale. David, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I enjoy listening to you. Yeah, I have a theory why Iran wants to block Mousavi from winning. You see, because the Ayatollah nevertheless controls Iran, Iran normally has elections that are valid. With that stated, Lebanon a few weeks ago had elections where the pro-Western coalition of Lebanon gained more seats than Hezbollah. Now, why this links with the Iranian election is because Mousavi has criticized Ahmadinejad for heavily funding Hezbollah while Iran is in utter financial meltdown. The mullahs still want a Shia entity to survive as a satellite state in Lebanon, regardless, so that they can keep their eyes on Israel and the pro-Western government of Lebanon.
So what is your main point?
Well, this was in regards to why Mousavi, why the mullahs don't want Mousavi from winning to begin with.
Let's start with who the mullahs are. They're throwbacks. They're 15th century throwbacks who want women in burqas and no freedom at all. No freedom of thought, no freedom of speech. So let's define who the mullahs are. They're religious tyrants. Is that correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
And Iran was ripped off by these religious fanatics when Khomeini came to power. Khomeini came to power with the aid of none other than Jimmy Carter. Do you remember that? Jimmy Carter spent his entire administration undermining the Shah of Iran. The government media complex kept saying the Shah was an evil man. The Shah had secret police that tortured people. The Shah was this, the Shah was that. So our ally in Iran, the Shah, was driven into exile. And who took over? The tyrannical mullahs. That made Jimmy Carter very happy. Now Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater, is in the Middle East saying that he wants Hamas taken off the terrorist list. Have you followed that one?
Yes.
Okay. So now we know who Jimmy Carter is. Jimmy Carter is fundamentally a salesman for radical Islam. In my opinion, Jimmy Carter is a salesman for radical Islamic interests. You can mark that down if you'd like. You could put it down and you could Twitter it for all I care. That's how I see things. Florida, Stephen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's an honor to speak to you. I believe it was also Sun Tzu who said, if you want to know your enemy, read his newspapers. Well, if that were written today, it'd be, if you want to know your enemy, watch his television shows.
Or if you want to know your enemy, then own his newspapers. because they may as well own our newspapers for the way they are written. Communist China may as well own the editorial board of the New York Times, the LA Times, and every other major enterprise called newspaper, because they are expressing their viewpoint daily.
Hey, la dee ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba do, ba do ba do ba ba. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell
me. We're having a minor French Revolution here in America. I mean, I've studied the French Revolution for many years. We don't have the guillotine yet, nor do I think we will, but we have the equivalent of the French Revolution. The beginnings of it began certainly long before Obama. Bush was a Marxist when it came to, I actually called him, I told you again, I'll say it over and over again, a year ago at least, a fiscal socialist. But the fact of the matter is, you've been put to sleep for several decades now. And now that you're coming out of your Rip Van Winkle stage, you're coming to understand that the socialist government that you thought was your enemy has actually turned out to be very much on display here in America. Now, what do I mean by that? Why did I start the show talking about the sale begins when the customer says no? Because that was built upon individual aspirations, meaning the individual, in order to get ahead, had to fight, had to struggle, had to accept rejection. But because of 30 years of mommyism in our educational process, the individual has been crushed and turned into a collective mush. And the fact of the matter is that collective thought is now the modality that is being promulgated both by government and the media. That's how I see it. And so you now live in a nation that doesn't reflect the nation of even 30 or 40 years ago. You thought that with civil rights legislation, race and ethnicity would no longer be a handicap nor an asset in public life. And we were all for it. We all wanted equality. But when you look at Sonia Sotomayor, who has a zero record as a judge, who didn't have the grades to get into the school she got into, who was pushed ahead by her own admission as a result of affirmative action, you find that the exact opposite of the goals and ideals of civil rights legislation of the 60s has come to pass. Again, let me repeat, civil rights legislation in the 60s was predicated on the concept that race and ethnicity should not be a handicap nor an asset in public life. But right now we see in the case of Sotomayor that race and ethnicity are now being used as an asset in public life. That's how she is being pushed forward. Anyone who says anything else is called a racist or this and that. I can go down the list. I can talk about many, many other things, but I don't think I need to go further than I've already expressed. But if you look at the economy, let's get down to brass tacks. Let's look at the economy. General Motors. Once the world's largest car manufacturer, what was said years ago was that was good for GM is good for America. 2009, GM is bankrupt. 60% of the company owned by Obama. Half of its car brands removed from the marketplace. The nation's free market capitalism, you want to call it Anglo-Saxon capitalism if you want, has now been replaced by a state-controlled economy, known by some as a command economy. In control, the production controlled, who? By Obama and his minions. 80% of AIG owned by the federal government. 30% of Citicorp owned by the government. Federal authorities forced Chrysler to be merged with an Italian company. And if President Obama is not stopped, health care, which represents 17% of the economy, will be controlled by Obama. Do you understand this? You want me to go down the list? 1963. When I graduated college, students reached their highest level on SAT tests and the highest level that they ever scored on international exams in science and math compared with foreigners. 2009, U.S. students scored near the bottom in these international tests. That's despite fortunes being spent on educational spending. Why did that happen? I can give you five different reasons, but I don't want to give them to you. I think you can figure them out. And now, right now, we're at a stage where the world has changed. And where are we? Maybe you can tell me where we are. Are we headed into a new world order that you don't want to be dragged into? A dangerous one? A world inconsistent with the traditions of America? I believe so. And that's what makes me get up every morning and do this show. Why do I oppose socialism? Because socialism led to over 100 million deaths in the 20th century. That's right. Socialism was called something else in the 20th century, of the type that Obama has been promulgating on America. It was called communism. We don't use that term anymore because it is incorrect to most liberals. Instead, they call it something else. They call it progressivism. But make no mistake about it. If you scratch the surface of progressives, you will find a diehard communist. And that's the world you're being dragged into. And that's why I talked about the world through a frying pan yesterday. And the sale begins when the customer says no. What would you like to talk about? New York City, WOR, Carla. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, Michael, I'm so glad to talk to you again. I'm the lady who talked to you about the situation when Obama was down in South America, and I talked about the strategy of changing the culture here by importing illegals to change
yes.
the culture away from that. What I wanted to say to you is that when Obama does nothing, he is doing everything. Doing nothing is saying something very loudly. He's saying...
When you're saying when he does nothing about North Korea and nothing about Iran, he's actually doing something.
Fine with me. He's saying right
Yeah,
off.
What I said earlier was by acquiescing to dictatorships, you are actually approving of the dictatorships.
Saying, I'm with you, brother. When you say, when Ahmadinejad takes the lead, I'm with you, brother. And why would he want Ahmadinejad to be back in power? Because they share the same Islamic apocalyptic vision. They're both...
Well, now I disagree with you. I don't know. I don't think he shares such an apocalyptic vision from the Muslim perspective at all. I think he's a diehard Fabian socialist. It's a much different story than that.
I don't know. I think he was very influenced by Farrakhan, and Farrakhan shares that vision, and Farrakhan is the person who called him the one, the Messiah.
Well, I don't think it was Farrakhan who influenced as much as it was Reverend Wright, who was an anti-white, anti-American preacher. Let's lay it on the line. Anti-white, anti-American, anti-Semitic. That's Reverend Wright. He sat in the church for 20 years. I think that's a better indicator of where Obama's coming from than Louis Farrakhan. I think he's way beyond the Nation of Islam in terms of his worldview. Thank you for the call. I wouldn't get that apocalyptic. Let's, you know, cut to the chase here. All he wants is a French Revolution. He is the Robespierre of our time. That's who he is. And he wants to refashion everything in the United States of America in his own image. Everything. And he's rejecting everything that America was built upon. All the historical antecedents of this nation are being overthrown by this president of the United States. He wants to determine the salaries of all employees in companies receiving TARP financing. That's amazing. He wants to redistribute wealth through a method of taxation unseen in the history of this country. It's antithetical to the founding of the nation, but that's what he wants to do. He wants to apologize for American actions in the past, and he's been doing so ever since he became president. Goes to Muslim countries and gets on his hands and knees and says, we're wrong. It's unbelievable to me. I can go down the list, but the fact of the matter is, it is a revolution occurring right in front of your eyes. True, the guillotines have not arrived. But I believe that this administration will very soon stifle internal dissent, sooner rather than later. And I believe this administration, while being wimpy against America's declared enemies, will be anything but wimpy when it comes to internal dissent in this country. That's what I think is going on in this country right now. And I think the American people still have a chance, whether they be Democrats or Republicans or independents, to restore the constitutional principles and national traditions of America before it's too late. I think that if we don't stand up to the Obama revolutionaries, we are going to have an absolute French Revolution in this country, and you will be the loser. That's my opinion. We don't know where this ends, but we know where it could end. The fact of the matter is we have an obligation to make sure it doesn't end the way the revolutionaries such as Bill Ayers want it to end. New York City, WOR, Sam, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hello, Michael.
Yes.
I have a few points I want to make about Obama. And as you say, he's a very dangerous president, dangerous for the country. He says he doesn't want to meddle. How come he meddles in Israel? Tells them what to do. Over there, he's not wimpy, just the opposite of being wimpy. Let me make
right.
another point before I make my third point.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you're aware, of a inspector general by the name of Mr. Walpin.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the story for years. He caught one of Obama's cronies stealing $1.2 million, and Obama fired him. They put in someone in that Michelle picked, an old friend from Chicago. I know the story.
Last Wednesday, this gentleman got a phone call from a White House lawyer telling him he had to resign within an hour or be fired.
No, I know the whole story. It's a corrupt administration. It is Chicago jackbooted politics at its worst. Al Capone may as well be running this machine.
All right,
make your third point. I can hardly hear you. For some reason, the sound is dim, but go ahead.
Yeah, my third point is that we should not wait for 4 years to vote him out, if we can do that. But maybe with God's help, we could put together a Republican Congress. And I'm not crazy for the Republicans, but anything is better than Obama put together.
Well, my prediction is that during midterm elections in 2 years, there's going to be a tidal shift in this country. I'll go on record as saying that. I believe the Democrat Party is going to be turned upside down because of these socialist policies, taxation, oppression of dissent, apologizing, taking the side of the enemy, and basic passivity towards our real enemies. I believe that the Democrats are going to be thrown out en masse. Unfortunately, phony Republicans are going to be ushered in. That's why I would like to encourage independents to run for congressional seats. Go up against any Republican and any Democrat, and you're liable to win. I'd especially like to encourage returning military veterans to run on their military record. That alone should get you elected. You serve the country, run for office. You have something to offer as opposed to politicians who have very little to offer. Okay? Amarillo, Texas. David, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, regarding the civil armed security force that Obama spoke of, I just wanted 30 seconds to read from the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. They weren't called a civil army back then. They were called Praetorian Guards.
Right.
And it says who's listening.
Right, and under Adolf Hitler, they were called the Brown Shirts or the SA. And then when he killed off the SS killed off the SA, he had an SS that was separate from the German military, the Wehrmacht, because the German military could not be trusted to salute the Austrian. Consequently, he had to build up his own a force of street thugs who were loyal only to him. Trust me, I understand what feudalism is.
Listen to this, Michael, and tell me if it doesn't extend chills up your back. It says the Praetorian Guards, whose licentious fury was the first symptom and cause of the decline of the Roman Empire, derived their institution from Augustus, that crafty tyrant, sensible that laws might condemn, but that arms alone could maintain his usurped dominion, had gradually formed this...
Okay, I don't understand, David. This is a hard... I know that you're reading this, but it makes sense to you, but it's very hard on radio, so forgive me for having to kill it, because it's hard for people to pick up stuff from books. One who knows neither the enemy nor himself will invariably be defeated in every engagement. Who's that, Sun Tzu? One who knows neither the enemy nor himself will invariably be defeated in every engagement. Now, do you believe that Obama knows himself? I believe Obama has been given everything without having to fight for it or struggle for it. Justice Sotomayor is being made into a Supreme Court judge based upon certain factors that are extraneous to her qualifications. I am certainly positive that Obama has been made president as a result of extraneous matters other than his inherent accomplishments. I'll be right back. Neither the enemy nor himself will invariably be defeated in every engagement. Sun Tzu. Good one. Subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. When has our army last fired a shot? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Brendan in New York on WOR. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike, I just want to start out by saying, I just want to say God bless our men and women of the greatest military in the world.
All right, fine, great. Now, what do you really want to say?
The point I want to make is, Michael, if these people in Iran, if they want democracy, they should do what this country did 225 years ago, stand up and get the democracy themselves.
Well, they are standing up, but they need help, don't they?
No, I understand. I understand that, but still.
They are standing up. They're dying for democracy in Iran right now. And the last thing they need is a president stabbing them in the back by doing nothing and saying it's not my business.
No, I know, Michael, but we also realize we have 140,000 men and women over in the middle.
I didn't say send military support. How about sending verbal support to the democracy movement in Iran? Would that have cost Obama anything?
Yes, no, you're right. You're always right.
Of course I'm always right. When I'm wrong, I admit it. But, Brendan, I'm not here just to pick a fight with you and act like a wise guy. I didn't say send the military to Iran. How about sending some moral support in the form of a president who took over the United States of America, the leading light of the world, till he came along? And he says to him, it's not our business. I never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, but
last caller said, Iran's not his business, but Israel is his business?
Yeah, I'm just...
How does that figure?
That we once again are going to dedicate our military and put the lies...
Well, it's not the military. Guys, can you raise the volume of the callers? I'm going deaf here. Okay, I don't know. I jacked up line number 7. I can't hear a thing. Spend a few extra electrons, okay? Give me a little sound here. 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco, KNEW. Dave, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I pretty much feel the same way you do. I've never felt, you know, like our government is more out of control than it is right now. And, you know, honestly, I'm getting a little worried and thinking of leaving the country, too. I just don't know where to go.
Nobody knows where to go. But if Obama militarizes a private security force, as he said he might during the campaign, and it was swept under the table by ABC, CBS, and NBC and CNN, if he does that, if he militarizes a private security force that answers only to him, I'm leaving the country. You say, well, where are you going? It certainly won't be England.
No, I know the list of places you can't go, but
I don't know. We're thinking, a lot of people I know are thinking about where to go. I don't know where you can go in this world today. The creeping arms of the octopus of fascism is everywhere. I understand that. And Obama's a little too cozy with the dictatorships on the planet. That's what worries me. Just a little too cozy with them. Doesn't seem to oppose them. He only opposes returning army veterans, anti-abortion activists. Let's see who else was on the list. We don't know yet. We haven't seen the list yet. They haven't released it. Maybe you're on the list. I suppose anybody who doesn't support the Obama administration is on the domestic terrorist list that Homeland Security put together. We don't know yet. No one has seen the list. It hasn't been released. Las Vegas, Mike, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, the whole idea of democracy in Iran or any other country is ridiculous. We don't have a democracy here. Our founding fathers fought for liberty, not democracy. Democracy is what ruins nations. That's my point. Have a good day.
I understand the difference between democracy and fairness. And trust me, I understand democracy leads to tyranny. I've studied it all. In fact, if you grant too much democracy to too many people, eventually you'll have a tyranny, which we have right now. That's why we wound up where we are. If you grant the voting rights to illegal aliens, non-citizens, you wind up with a president who has many question marks surrounding him, including his own birth certificate. And I understand that movement is growing. And believe me, I'm aware of it. I don't want to talk about it because I'm not going to talk about it right now, so don't call me on that one. That's being covered very, very well, but we'll see where that ends up. You're never going to get an answer on that. They've all dummied up on it, so don't even waste your time, and it's too late. There are many other problems, but for the president to come out today and say, while people are being killed in the streets of Iran protesting the return of Ahmadinejad, who has cast Iran into a nightmare situation, for them, while they're dying in the streets, for the president to say it's not his business to say anything means he's already supported Ahmadinejad. That worries me. He's always a wimp when it comes to tyrants. He bows down to the king of Saudi Arabia and takes a gold necklace like he's a rap star visiting a tent in the middle of the desert, and no one says anything. The king has no clothes. Michelle Obama wears the most disgusting clothing I've ever seen in my life, and they say she's an icon of fashion. Are you people crazy? She's an embarrassment, frankly, in terms of what she wore to England. Who saw a woman like this wearing a sleeveless outfit to England? You call that a fashion icon? This is propaganda. It is pure propaganda. Again, read the fable, The King Has No Clothes, by Hans Christian Andersen. You're witnessing a reenactment of The King Has No Clothes. You can't say that everything he and his wife do is perfect, can you? So by the same token, therefore they must be making some mistakes, correct? They're making a lot of mistakes. But if you say one word, it doesn't mean you're a racist. Maybe you're an American. And if you don't believe in dissent, then you ought to move to Iran and join the mullahs and get a truncheon.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Last night I cooked paella, the Spanish dish, and I used a pan I've had for at least 30 years. A very large stainless steel skillet with a glass top so I could watch the cooking. Today I went into one of those fancy cooking stores that has all these items that you think you need but you never use. My mother cooked on a four-burner electric stove, remember, and she turned out three gourmet meals a day, six times a week if she needed to, on a four-burner electric stovetop with a few aluminum pans. Nevertheless, I went into this fancy cooking store, and I was thinking of cheating on my 30-year-old skillet. I was looking at new varieties of the same pan. Some were deeper, some were shinier, some had elaborate scroll work on them. The more I thought about it, the more I rejected each new item. I said, what's wrong with the pan I've got? It's worked for 30 years. I think I'll just keep it. An elderly lady who worked at the store and I had a chat about frying pans. She showed me the latest variety of skillet. In some extraordinary way. I don't know, you know, there's a lot of things working inside the human being, which was what makes us so utterly unbelievable. I mean, a dog lays on a step. You rub a dog on the stomach and give him a meal and take him for a walk. He lays on a step with his tongue out, rolls over for you to rub his belly. We're not dogs. We have higher aspirations. At least we should. That's what separates us from a dog. And if you just want to roll over and have the government rub your belly and give you a bone, go ahead, vote for Obama. Because you've turned yourself into basically a pet. That's how I see it. I come from people who were immigrants. They all struggled. They wouldn't take a dime in a government handout. They'd rather throw themselves off a fire escape. Today the government says you have to take it. You're not a good American unless you take a handout from the great Chairman Obama. It's crazy, the whole thing. It's upside down. But millions and millions of people see the world the way I do. Whether we are a diminishing number of people is the question. Whether the next generation, or let's say the younger generation, still can have a work ethic in a society like this, and whether they still want to achieve, I don't know. Certainly some do. Certainly many of you listening to the show will identify with what I'm saying, and you want to achieve, you know, you want to climb to the stars, so to speak. What drives you, though? What drives you? Why do you want to succeed? Tell me why. It's an interesting question. If I look back on my life to the beginning, and I shouldn't do this, you know, I know it's starting to get maybe tedious for me to be, I'm just doing a lot of soul searching now. And it's coming out on the show, I realize that. Why, I don't know. Maybe it's because of what I've been through in the last month with this crazy attack upon me by the UK government and my having to fight with every fiber of my being to get my name off that list. You think I don't talk about it since it's not bothering me. It is. And I'm not going to let go until this is done, until our justice is served. But it's also brought up a lot of things, you know, within me, and I hope it's not throwing the show off too much. I mean, I could do the news stuff. It's very, very heavy news. You know, there's very heavy news out there. Sotomayor saying she wouldn't have gotten anywhere without affirmative action. How come I didn't need affirmative action? I'm from the Bronx. Listen to clip 12.
Product of affirmative action. I am the perfect affirmative action baby. I am a Puerto Rican. Born and raised in the South Bronx, my test scores were not comparable to that of my colleagues at Princeton or Yale. Not so far off the mark that I wasn't able to succeed at those institutions.
So now we have an affirmative action woman who wants to be a Supreme Court justice, and we're not supposed to say, wait, foul ball, there are more qualified people out there? Excuse me, what kind of country do you want to live in? Why does she deserve to be a Supreme Court justice? Simply because of her ethnicity? That's crazy. Sorry, crazy. You must have a Latino? Then find one who got in without affirmative action. How's that? Find a brilliant jurist who wrote papers that are sterling in the legal journals. Okay? Then I'm all for it, even if it's a liberal. But don't put someone in just because she's of a certain ethnicity. I don't want to live in that country. I didn't have particularly good grades. I had to struggle to get grades. But guess what? I didn't do very well on the SATs. I'm not a particularly good memorizer. I'm a thinker, but I'm not a memorizer. But I wanted higher degrees, and I had to spend extra years to achieve them. Nobody gave me affirmative action degrees in anything. In fact, I made sure that any degree I earned was actually at the top of the field. I remember to this day reading when I was a kid at Queens College that I believe it was Herbert Hoover, and I could be mistaken. I could have this wrong. I believe he was a civil engineer and that he had achieved two master's degrees before becoming president. I so looked up to this guy, that his master's degree was the design of a bridge, a major bridge. So I said, wow, so it doesn't have to be just pie in the sky, you know, esoterica, that a master's degree can actually be something of value to the world. I said, that's amazing. Then I remember hearing that one of my professors, I think it was at Queens College, had had two master's degrees and a PhD. I thought he was like a mental god. So I figured that's something for me to shoot for. So I achieved two master's degrees and a PhD. And by the way, my master's degree was published in a Harvard University journal. I never talk about it. And my PhD dissertation became a book. Very unusual if you understand anything about academics, because most of these degrees are within the field and no one ever reads them. It's a little, you know, but mine actually became something. They were worthwhile. And I'm very proud of them. I never talk about it because it has no relationship to the radio show in one way or the other. Yes, the undertext, the subtext in a way, because my mind is so well trained and I learned how to write so succinctly in science. That's why I speak so succinctly, incidentally. See, it is a product of my education. You say, oh, well, he speaks in a truck driver's accent like he's from Brooklyn. It doesn't matter what my accent is, does it? What matters is what my words actually are and what I mean and what I say. I know people who speak the King's English who speak pure rubbish. So what's the difference? There's a huge difference. I mean, do you want content or do you want accent? That's all. So here we are. Sorry if I got off the... Actually, I'm not sorry about anything. That's what a radio show is.
Savage.
John, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes. Your comments on sugar hit right to the sweet tooth of huge issues. And I have neighbors and I watch, you know, they have kids, and I watch them use candy and sweets and Oreo.
It's unbelievable to me, John. We have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes, and the idiots never say it's connected to a sugar, and more sugar. The sugar epidemic in America is at an all-time high. When have you last seen anyone in the media say diabetes and sugar combine the two? Never. Because either they don't know or they're afraid to antagonize their advertisers. You understand?
Yeah, and I see that some people who think that they're being good with not giving their kids candy will make them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something, but they don't look at the label on the jelly and realize...
That's unbelievable. The mothers of today are the biggest ignoramuses with regard to feeding children. I was one of the pioneers in writing books in the 70s on feeding children and on nutrition for children. And the mothers then knew an awful lot about raising children sanely. There was a huge movement against sugar, owing to Dr. Feingold, who wrote about hyperactivity and sugar. Children were suffering from hyperactivity mood swings, hyperactivity mood disorders, and it was traced directly to their diets. And many mothers learned it, and they took their kids off sugary foods and put them on other foods. They took them off foods with dyes in them. There was a huge movement. The children were beneficiaries of that. When have you last seen one of the mothers who care so much about children, like Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi, for that matter, talk about diet and children? Never. They don't know anything about it. The fact of the matter is all of this has been lost because of industry pressures. Thanks for the call. I'm a fanatic on sugars because I suffered migraine headaches through my youth and my teen years to the point of almost debilitating migraine headaches. I had to lock myself in dark rooms until the pain went away. It was overwhelming. I have a very minor migraine right now. You know why? I cheated on my diet. You know what I did last night? I sat in a sedentary manner. I hate myself for it. And I ate a piece of chocolate. No, I'm going to admit it to you. I have no idea. See, once you start going down the slobola line and sit and watch television, you're going to want to then degenerate your diet. The next step is God knows what. I did. I ate a piece of chocolate. I have a smashing migraine from it. I know what I shouldn't do. But like everyone else, sometimes I do. I normally enjoy very good health because I've eaten very well most of my life. I'm a moderate exerciser, very moderate. Never had a joint break, never had surgery on a joint because I don't run. I bicycle. Running is one of the most dangerous exercises ever invented for the human body.
Savage.
So last night, I'm in bed, again, watching too much television. I'm starting to get embarrassed now. The weather's bad, so I have an excuse to stay home and watch television, and I do it, and I shouldn't. Because when the children were young, we didn't have a television. I refused to let them watch TV. I was one of those. They both turned out great. Maybe it helped. But now, I find myself watching television at night, and too much of it, mainly movies. In fact, either the History Channel, Military History, the Science Channel, National Geographic, or a movie. So late at night, I'm watching a movie from 1948 that had me captivated for a number of reasons. It was, I don't know the name of it, but it was about an FBI agent who goes undercover into the underworld, pretends to be a criminal. And it was so unbelievably bad that I couldn't stop watching it. You know, and now we walk down the halls of the FBI where J. Edgar Hoover. Remember those movies? The guys all had those Dick Tracy suits. So I'm watching the movie, and I start to see certain things in it. A lot of the characters were from real life. When they went into a gym in Philadelphia where the scenes were shot, they were real boxers training in a gym, which was very interesting to watch. The characters. Where are the men like that? I ask myself, what happened to men that they've all become almost homogenized in this country? When I was a young boy, the men were all, like, weird-looking. Guys had, like, nasal hair, ear hair. But aside from that, I'm doing that to attract your eyes and ears to what I'm saying to you. The men look different. Now everyone has a homogenized, pasteurized, aluminumized look. I don't understand what happened to my country. Men were very unique. I'm saying, you take a gym full of white men, they all look different. They had weird faces. Now everyone has the same kind of, like, idiotic grin. But anyway... So the movie's about an FBI agent who goes undercover and gets into the rackets, whatever, in order to bust him. So Jack Nicholson, what is it called? The Untouchables? I forget. The Untouched. I don't even remember the movie's name. Beowulf, help me out. The Departed. And it was excellent. I really liked Nicholson. I liked DiCaprio. I liked Matt Damon. They were all good in the movie, and the movie was very captivating. But a good portion of the plot was taken directly from this 1948, slap them together and, you know, throw it out their movie. Now, that's not why I'm talking about it. In the movie, there's a quick scene about them wanting a fighter who looks like he's going to be the favorite to take a fall for money. You know, take a dive, in other words. In other words, he's the favorite, and they say to him, if you go down in the third round, we'll make a lot of money because you're the favorite. And in all those movies from the 45 era up until about when the hippie scum took over the movie business, after the hippie communist scum from New York City took over the movie business, most of the movies were about temptations and honor. A fighter was set. It was said, you take a dive and you'll make a lot of money. And it was the tension of the fighter saying, no, I have honor. I will not take a dive. And what usually happened to him is he got beaten up or killed. Or you go back to On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, that great movie. What was that all about? That was about honor. He was unwilling to take a dive, in other words. And he died for it. So the movies were always about the temptations and the honor of the man who would not accept the temptation for money, for the quick buck. That's what the tension was. That's what the storyline was. That's what America grew up on. That's what America became strong on. Now you got Murdoch who's into the quick buck, and so he'll take the temptation for a higher rating and a quicker buck. No honor. Do you understand what I'm saying to you or not? how a society can be formed by its art, and you can't condemn every movie ever made. That would be absurd. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. Some are funny, some are not funny, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm getting at is there were movies about morality in the days that I grew up. For example, crime never paid. You never could see the bad guy win in a movie when I grew up. My father taught me that. He said, you notice, Michael, every movie the bad guy gets caught in the end. Now we know that's nonsense. All you got to do is look at the U.S. Senate. We understand that. But in those days, you were conditioned by your movie to realize you'd get caught in the end. So I asked my father, why is it? He said, well, the FBI worked out something with Hollywood where Hollywood agreed never to show the bad guy winning because they didn't want to encourage people to go into that line of work. Now, compare that to the movies being produced now by the hippie pothead scum from hell in the movie business today, where the bad guy is always shown to win, and the straight guy is shown to be a moron. Play on the waterfront.
In the garden, he came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
All right, we got the picture. Get out the Kleenex. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum. Now, what you have today are people who are bums, who have no class, who think they're somebody. You get the picture? Do you understand how hard the job is that I do to try to put everything into context? It's almost impossible. When you have such power that they can turn upside down, straight up, and you don't even know which way is up anymore, and you don't know what honor is anymore. But I hope you understood what I'm telling you, that the movies in those days were always about a hero being tempted to take a dive for money, for example, and not taking it, and paying the consequences. He didn't wind up with an award for it. Today, as I am trying to tell you, there is no class. They're nobodies pretending to be somebody simply because they took a quick buck.
Savage.
Last night, I did some soul searching. I said, why has God chosen to put me in this position that an entire nation would attack me so unfairly? I didn't have an answer. And so I looked, I went back to the Holy Scriptures, my well-marked blue Bible, the Old Testament, and I read Leviticus. I said, you know, it's a funny thing I do with the Bible. I mean, I'm no biblical expert. I flipped through it. And sometimes when I get in trouble, I flip to a page and see, does that work? Well, it worked last night. Let me tell you what this was. Now, many of us, we're only three generations away from a super religious personality. I don't care how atheistic you may be or how wildly disconnected you may be from the church. You're only two to three generations away from an extremely religious person who built your family. You didn't build your family. You inherited your family. The person who built it was made of much stronger stuff, I can guarantee you. And they went through much harder times than any of us are going through. And so they needed the Bible to get through hard times. They needed to believe in God and believe in you know, the right way and the wrong way, good and evil. And I flipped to Leviticus 26, and I'm going to summarize it. I can't read you every word because I said, oh, my God, it really scared me. And it was about this. It said, you shall make no idols, neither shall you rear you up a graven image or a pillar, neither shall you place any figured stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So it was about the Sabbath and bowing down to graven images. And then God says, if you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments, I will give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield a produce in the trees. You shall eat your bread. I will give you peace. You shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will cause evil beasts to seize out of the land and so forth and so on. And you're going to lead a great life. And he says to them, that's if you do the right thing. But in 14, it gets really bad. See, the Old Testament was fire and brimstone. It was, this is it, or is only one way. It was God's way or the highway. Let's put it to you that way. So he really wanted you to keep the Sabbath, and he didn't want you to bow down to false idols. I'll let you figure out what a false idol is. I'll let you figure out what a graven image is. I'll let you figure out what the graven images of today are. But he says, if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall reject my statutes, and if your soul abhor mine ordinances so that you will not do all my commandments, but break my covenant, this is what's coming. I also will do this unto you. I will appoint terror over you. Notice the word terror, terrorists. I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever, that shall make the eyes to fail and the soul to languish, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. They that hate you shall rule over you, and you shall flee when none pursueth you, meaning you're going to be frightened of everything. And if you will not yet for these things hearken unto me, it gets worse then. He says, if you still don't do what I want you to do, then I will chastise you seven times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron, and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her produce, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. And then he gets even more demanding. And he says, and if you walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring seven times more plagues upon you according to your sins. And I will send the beast of the field among you, which shall rob you of your children and destroy your cattle and make you few in number. And your ways shall become desolate. Now, let me pause right there. Look at America today. America has a negative birth rate amongst the white Caucasian. So for last I checked, it's a birth rate that's below the reproduction rate. Below the rate necessary to reproduce itself. Well, just take that in your thinking. Now, he goes on, and I'm going to finish up here. God says, but in spite of these things, and if in spite of these things you still are not corrected unto me, but will walk contrary to me, then will I also walk contrary unto you. And I will smite you, even I seven times for your sins. And I'll bring a sword upon you that shall execute the vengeance of the covenant, and you shall be gathered together within your cities, and I will send the pestilence among you. And you shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver your bread again by weight, and you shall eat and not be satisfied. I don't know exactly what that means about the 10 women. A biblical scholar, they probably have argued over this for thousands of years. But the last word is, you shall eat and not be satisfied. Sounds much like Western civilization, doesn't it? Rich tables laden with rich foods. People eating and not satisfied. That is why they go to one fancy restaurant after another for the next execution of a new meal. Something new. They sprinkle a little from here and there, put it on a meal, and they still don't like it. Why? I'll let you figure it out. And then he goes on, and it gets even worse, and I'm not going to read the rest of it because it gets worse and worse and worse. He just doesn't let you go. I mean, it doesn't get better. And you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemy shall eat you up. That's pretty frightening stuff. I mean, is it just allegory? Who knows? The random musings of olive growers who were deficient in vitamin B3. It's hard to say. I suppose that if Leviticus were alive today, Nigel Sheinwald, the British ambassador to the U.S., would ban him from Britain. Because I would think that Leviticus would be likely to inflame and cause hatred and possibly, I don't know what else. Who knows? Certainly was meant to inflame Leviticus, wasn't it? Certainly was full of hate, wasn't it, Nigel? Have you gotten yet to burning the Bibles in England? Gotten around to that yet? The people behind you might be up to that soon, a little book burning. They had it in your neighboring Saxon nation in the 30s. There's no reason you Anglos shouldn't burn your Bibles. Your Saxon friends did it in the 30s. Any book that violated the government was burned. Nigel, suppose you learned that at Balliol. These are the statutes and ordinances and laws which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel in Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. Now, I got to repeat to you, I read this because I was trying to find some salvation somewhere. You say, well, wow, man, you're a weird guy. You found salvation in that? I can't say I did. But I found some truths in it. I mean, you know, you take it on a minor scale. There's some truths in that, meaning we're all fallen angels. I've said that to you. None of us are up to the standards of the Bible. Nobody can be. You never can hit that golden, you know, you can't be a saint. You can only be a man. You try your best. You want to do the Big Ten every day? That's a big deal. Try to make the Big Ten every day. You're a good person. I don't know how many of us can make up to the Big Ten, but at least it keeps you know where the green light is, the red light, the yellow light. Keeps you on track, doesn't it? Well, I guess all this did for me was say, you know what, Mike? Maybe you ought to really get back to a little God talk on your show and a little God talk in your head, because you've been a little off key here lately, you know? And that's it. That's all I saw last night. God only knows what my fingers will flip to tonight in the Bible. Well, here's one from Isaiah, actually one of my favorite ones. This is specifically for the Brits. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have wrought evil unto themselves. Say ye of the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him. For the work of his hands shall be done to him. As for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. Oh, Sir Nigel, that is written for you. As for my people, a babe is their master. That would be Mr. Brown. Oh, my people, they that lead thee cause thee to err, and destroy the way of thy paths. Pretty interesting. England has some great cathedrals. I wonder if they actually listen to what they mumbo-jumbo in those cathedrals anymore. Or is it all kind of pomp and circumstance?
Savage.
Any topic is fair game here. Okay, Columbus, Ohio, Fatty. Fatty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael. I haven't read your book, so forgive me if you've addressed this already, but how do you define culture, and more specifically, American culture? It seems like it changes, right. I mean, pretty much every few years or so.
No, it actually doesn't. The people change, but the culture doesn't change. That's the whole—you see, this is the problem that most people are having. They think that multiculturalism should change America. It should not change America. The core values of American culture are set in stone. The people change. The race, the racial makeup changes. But in the old days, they would assimilate to the American culture. Now, what is the American culture? I have defined this. The American culture, when I say borders, you know what that is. When I say language, you know what that means. English only. When I say culture, many of you have been hoodwinked into believing that we're a multicultural nation, which we are not. We are a nation of many races and many cultures. That is true. It has been true from the beginning. But in the past, people would come over and become Americans. Now they come over and they want you to become them. They want you to speak Spanish. They want you to act Muslim. They want you to give up going to the church and going to a mosque. This is not going to go on in this country much longer. We're going to have a revolution in this country if this keeps up. These people are pushing the wrong people around. Just watch Extreme Fighting and you'll see what the white male is capable of. That's all I can say to you. Just understand why Extreme Fighting is becoming popular in this country. Because the rage has reached a boil. If they keep pushing us around, and if we keep having these schmucks running for office, catering to the multicultural people who are destroying the culture of this country, there will be a revolution in this country. Guaranteed. The people, the white male in particular, let me talk specifically. The white male in particular, the one without connections, the one without money, has nothing to lose, and you haven't seen him yet. You haven't seen him explode in this country. And he's still the majority, by the way, in case you don't know it. He is still the majority. No one speaks for him. Everyone craps on him. People use him for cannon fodder. And he has no voice whatsoever. He has nobody speaking for him. So he goes to these extreme fighting events. Take a look at them, and you'll see what the white male is capable of. And you're going to find out that if you keep pushing this country around, you'll find out that there's an ugly side to the white male that has been suppressed for probably 30 years right now. But it really has never gone away. But that doesn't answer your question. What is the culture? It's very simple. The culture of this nation is built upon several founding documents. One, I'm sure the ACLU will find a problem with. That's called the United States Constitution. That's a founding document. The Bill of Rights, founding document. The Bible. That's correct. The Bible. The rules of the Bible. The entire nation was built around the rules of the Bible. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. But the Christian rules. The Christian Bible built upon the Jewish Bible. So if you want to ask me what the founding documents are, those are the founding documents, and that's the culture of America. Now, did I say that Buddhism shouldn't be practiced? No. Did I say Hinduism shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. Did I say that Islam shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. But in the past, the other religions were practiced, but they did not try to dominate the nation, which is fundamentally a Christian nation. It is not a Buddhist nation. It is not a Hindu nation. It is not a Muslim nation. This is primarily, has always been and always will be, primarily a Christian nation. The rest of the people certainly are welcome to practice their religions, but they're not welcome to deny Christianity its place in the family of man. Now, I've given you a long, long story on this, but there are other documents that go back to the Magna Carta, but that would require an education beyond the sixth grade, so I'll stop using large words. I don't like cutesy. I don't like people who talk to their children cutesy. It makes me squirm. Have you had these parents talk to their children with, like, cute talk? That's why the child winds up a psycho. You know, I got to tell you a little trick about child rearing. In my opinion, one man's opinion, and I haven't done so bad. Speak to them as you would an adult, and they will grow up more intelligent, and they will be more competent younger. You ever listen to the people with the children? I love the ones who take them to a restaurant and give them a lesson in front of you to show how smart they are, how smart the child is with the pencils and the coloring book. You're spending $29 for a plate of spaghetti that costs 4 cents, and there they are next to you. The guy with the ponytail, he's 63, with a 30-year-old girl he met somewhere at a club. And right away, a year later, they have the 2 years later, they have the baby. And 4 years later, ready the coloring book and the crayons in the pasta palace. And they're all set up. They got the whole thing. They got the backpack. They got the diaper at your next table. And they got the coloring book and the crayons, which should be outlawed in restaurants. It's not ding-dong school. Not everything is a ding-dong school. There was a time, and I raised children. I wasn't allowed in certain restaurants with the children when they were young. I didn't like it. But I understood it. People didn't want to be disturbed by children. Now, if they get sued, if they say to the people, you know what, we'd rather you not change doo-doo at the table, right away they call ACLU and a lawyer like an ACLU, or like a smarter one than an ACLU lawyer, the brother who went into private practice with the same mentality. Marvin goes into the ACLU because he's stupid, and Barry goes into the private practice and sues, but they're the same mentality, two heads of the same hydra. That's it, the coloring books in the restaurant. How do you spell Louisiana, Louise? Very good. And then the mother claps at the desk. Yeah, this is where you're sitting, you're having a romantic meal. $29.95 for the pasta al ripoffo. Antipasto consisting of a piece of old rotten cheese from Brooklyn that they couldn't sell to the Italians in New York because they know better, so they ship it to San Francisco. That's $9.95 for one little piece of mozzarella cheese and a tomato. They give it an Italian name. $9.95 with a tomato and one little piece of cheese that the Italians rejected on the wharf. Even the wharf rats rejected it, but they can sell it in San Francisco. And $29.95 for pasta al creato. I don't mind it, all right, but you're going in for the ambience. No one's there for the food. They're in for the ambience. But the coloring book is there right away. And the lessons you have to listen to. Do you ever hear these lessons at these tables? Does this go on in Louisiana or only in the major cities that you have to listen to these impossible parents? I never talk cute to the children. Okay, I'm a product of my upbringing. Harsh, Spartan-like. Don't be cute. I don't like cute. No jokes. Just get back to work. No matter what I did, I tried to entertain my family. All right, get back to work. Stop the entertainment. He knew I was trying to, like, wiggle out of work by entertaining him. All right, that's very good. Now get back to it. Now radio. On the way into work. I swear to God, if I was, like, driving in his car, I don't know how old I was. He didn't want the radio on. If I tried to put the radio on because it was horrible, sitting next to your father in a car on the way to work, it was going to be a horrible day in a disgusting market all day long, which I didn't want to do. I didn't want to go to begin with, but I didn't say anything. Okay, he needed me there. That was the way it was done. I didn't have any option anyway. It was like a little prison camp. But all right, so you sit in the right seat like a dummy, your hands folded on your lap, and nothing, not a word, mum. The whole ride. BQE, the Kosciuszko Bridge, the stink of the pork dying there, the Trun's meat market, where the eye goes out. You think that I'm the point I'm making is a little different. So if you sit in the car, you're next to your father driving to work, and you know you can't say anything. There's nothing to say. He's grim. He's white. His hands are white knuckled on the wheel because he's gone in again another horrible day to make a living. Nothing was fun. Nobody worked in those days for fun. This was an evolution of the Dr. Spock generation. Find what's fun and pursue it. Pursue what's fun. To my father, nothing was fun. It was grim. Horrible. It was like Grimm's fairy tales. Came over, work, drop dead, and move on. It's in the ground. In the ground. That's it. Next case. Next generation. There was no fun from another world. They didn't know what the word fun was. So he's driving to work. The hands are like white knuckles. And I'm sitting here. So my hand reaches, the left hand reaches for the radio dial, like to punch a button in. No radio. So what do you mean no radio? I don't want music. Why? Never mind why. This is not entertainment. It's work. So, all right. So work has to be torture. I get it. All right. That's why I'm in the radio business. I was made for this. What I'm getting at is he didn't like cute. If he saw people, and I'm the same way, unfortunately, I become him in essence. This is how it is. All the years I resisted becoming him, I came, a long time ago I became my father. I admit it. There must be something to it. Worked for him. It's worked for me so far. But he didn't like cute. People who talk cute to the children. You know, the guy was 100% right. Let's say I'm talking generally, 9 out of the 10 couples did not talk to their children in because it was like embarrassing. Anyone who did that, the child either wound up in San Francisco wearing a pink set of tights at 19 expressing himself, or the girl wound up married to her sorority sister. 9 out of 10, they never wound up okay. None of them became anything. That's true because of the liberal upbringing. Liberalism not only is a mental disorder, but destroys children. You need to raise children the old-fashioned way. I don't say hurt them. I never got hit. He didn't hit me. Just verbal abuse. It worked better.